What's up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about finding and testing out small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. But enough about the show. Let's get into our next game. El Paso Elsewhere is the game for this week's episode. El Paso Elsewhere is a third-person shooter slash noir game that was developed and published by Strange Scaffold in 2023. So the game originally came out on PC, Xbox One, Series X, and S, and then in 2024 it was put on PS5, and it also came to iOS. And this game just screams Max Payne. Everything about it, from the fast-paced third-person shooter to the narration to the love story to the cynical, nihilistic tone. But it also takes a lot from West of Dead, which drew comparisons to Max Payne, as well as Hotline Miami, just like the quick levels, the quick gunplay, things like that. And visually, it is super basic. A little bit of Dreadnoughtical, which we did a while back, and like Crow Country. It really gives the vibes of like DK mode on GoldenEye for N64. So the visuals are not really the strong suit, but I think it is intentional. And the game released with an MSRP of $19.99. Just playing through straight through the story should take you about 10 hours. There are some trophies to get, and so completionists, maybe over 15. Me, I've been playing it on my PS5, and I got it on sale for $13.99, and I've probably put in about 5 or 6 hours. The game has 50 chapters, and I think I'm around chapter 30. The game does have a physical release for PS5 only, and that is at retail, so anywhere you can find that, Target, Amazon, Best Buy, things like that. And the physical is $19.99, just like the price. I don't know what's inside it. It would be nice if it had like a booklet or something like that, but I'm not sure. And like we said, the game was developed by Strange Scaffold. I checked out their website. It seems like they're a U.S. team, maybe out of Texas, hence the El Paso. But they seem on their website to manage a really fair amount of talent. A lot of previous devs who have been on big teams, small teams, and they really stress like the flexibility of workload. I want to say they're a bit like anti-crunch. I don't know if that's like in response to, recently what's been going on in the news the past few years, but they seem to want their developers to kind of make games at their pace. It seems like a lot of varied experience in terms of what games people have worked on. There's a whole like expose about the creative director. He's definitely messed around with smaller games, but also like some physical games as well, I think. The other games listed on their website, because they develop and publish, I hadn't heard of any of these games. They seem to be on the smaller side. And I had certainly not heard of this game, El Paso Elsewhere, but I saw it on sale and it had really good reviews, so I decided to give it a shot. All right, let's talk gameplay for El Paso Elsewhere. So like I said, third-person shooter, very Max Payne, West of Dead. You're going to hear me make those comparisons a lot. Super fast-paced. It's got the whole like tight quarters. You turn, you shoot. So a lot of just like that quick decision-making. and enemies coming at you. So let's start with just some of the basics. So it's a third-person shooter. You're able to move your camera around as well as your character. And just the basic feel. Again, I keep talking about it. This really feels like you're playing a Max Payne game, especially with the synergy of moving your character and the camera. It just feels so good, so fluid, and just so natural being able to move your character and move the camera as you turn a corner and just, bam, hit somebody right there with the shot. You're only going to be moving at one speed. It's a pretty steady speed unless you're like reloading or using a health item. But for the most part, there's no real need to run. You are able to adjust the sensitivity, especially of the cameras, and invert both axes. This is what I love. X and Y axis. It's not that hard, ladies and gentlemen. Include it as an option. Again, very great. Fluid feel, quick aim satisfaction. Like I said, turning a corner or even just opening a door and immediately going in the room and you see a couple enemies, move your camera a little bit, bam, move it a little bit, bam. There's just something about the response time, but also like it's not like an elastic effect. Some cameras, like it really takes a while to get the feel of it. This game, I feel like right as you start it, it feels really good. And of course, there's like a dot aim for your weapon, so that helps with centering. And there's also a little bit of leeway with that. Sometimes, like if an enemy's far away and I don't quite have the dot on them or they're moving, might be taking a shot, but it is pretty liberal in terms of whether I hit it or not. So there's going to be shooting, so you're going to have guns. Depending on the gun, if it's an automatic weapon, you can hold the shoot button, it'll just rapid fire. Or if it's not, like pistols or like a shotgun, you will have to press it individually. And so some of the guns that you'll get, you'll start with dual pistols, you'll get a shotgun, you'll get like an assault rifle, you'll get a lot of other things, as well as you'll get a throwable, like a Molotov cocktail. And these guns are going to have varying rates of fire, obviously if they're automatic versus if they are single shot. But depending on the gun, like even the pistol to the shotgun, like there's a bit more of a refresh time for the shotgun shots, which makes sense. And there's also some audio visual cues because they have to like cock it back. But the pistols, you can actually pepper them pretty quickly. And also there are going to be other stats for these guns. Like obviously they're going to do varying amounts of damage. Clip size is going to be different. And so reloading is going to be a thing here. What is really interesting is that there is an option to auto reload. So similar to the game that we played previously, Marfusha, that had a mechanic where like you just hold the gun, even when you're out of ammo, it'll automatically reload and you're just waiting and you just hold shoot and it's going to keep going. This game, it defaults to not doing that. So like you have to hit the reload button, but there is an option in the menu to actually auto reload. So I haven't tried that. I feel like it could really help with encounters, but who knows? That's really up to you. And you're going to get an arsenal of guns. I think at this point in the game, I have like 6 or 7. So you can easily swap between them. And actually, that happens really fast, like faster than you can reload. So sometimes if, you know, I'm going crazy and there's an encounter, enemies coming at me and I'm out of bullets, I just switch to another gun and I can easily adjust. You will have a physical attack. It's a little weird on the PS5. It's R3, so you have to click the camera button. You can use it to break furniture or things in the environment. Or you can use it to use a stake and stab an enemy. That is if you have one. So you can hold, I think, up to 5. But if you don't have any, you will do that and actually just push an enemy if an enemy is around you. You'll be able to dodge roll. You don't go that far with the dodge roll. And you do have to kind of move the camera as well. Like a lot of times, like if enemies are around me or they're like behind me, it can be a little, you know, a jumble, me dodge rolling and then turning around to see where they are. Nothing really new, but it's not as fluid in those instances. It's kind of more rigid. Sometimes you may have to claw it, but I didn't have to often. And there is a little bit of a refresh between dodge rolls. You can't do it that automatically. It's maybe like a second or two, but I definitely never really dodged rolled multiple times in a row. You are also able to jump. There's going to be like some very light platforming mechanics, really nothing. And you'll also, of course, have bullet time, as if there weren't enough Max Payne comparisons. So you have like a bullet time meter next to your health meter in the bottom left, but there's a button you can use to dive and it'll go into bullet time. And of course, like you can still aim your gun and shoot enemies and stuff like that. And then other times you can actually just start and stop the meter. I definitely forgot it a bunch of times, especially when the encounters were difficult. Just know that's something that you can have in your back pocket. Sometimes it'll happen automatically. Like if you go into a room and it's like via the story, like an overwhelming number of enemies, it'll go into bullet time automatically. I don't know how it depletes it when you dive, but when you just start and stop it with Triangle and PlayStation, that meter does go down. And I think you have to like kill enemies to put it back up. There will be a button to heal, and that'll be based on how many of the healing items you have. So if you're out of them, obviously you can't heal. I think you can hold up to 5, and you're chugging pills. And your character talks about it a lot. Again, could not be more Max Payne. And then other times you'll be walking through levels and whatnot, and prompts will show up for you to like open doors, play something, or listen to something. All right, so let's talk progression of the game. Like I talked about initially, the game apparently has 50 chapters. A lot of these are just mini sandbox levels. Really what you're doing is you're starting at a location and you're going to go through and do a lot of things, and you'll actually wind up looping back and going back to the starting location, which is an elevator. Now, the goal to get through the level, this can vary. In some levels, it's just kill all the enemies. It could be save all the hostages. It could be get to a specific location and then go back to the elevator, or it could be some kind of a boss fight. This is not very frequent. I think I've done it maybe once or twice, so it's not like a every 5 levels or something like that. And then along the way, inside of a level, there's minor gating and navigation within it. You're going to be moving around and progressing through. You're going to find frequent checkpoints, and it'll just pop up on the top right corner of the screen that you got to a checkpoint where it'll kind of save your progress. And you'll go into areas of these levels where there are literal gates or locked doors. The locked doors are going to be covered in a different color where you have to find a heart somewhere as like the key. And these areas within a level are kind of gated, very much encounter driven. So it could be just like kill all the enemies in this area and then the gate unlocks to get you to the next part of the level. Or once again, it could be save all the hostages in this little area or find the heart to get the key and then you move on. There's not really a lot of platforming in this game, even though, like I said, you do have a jump mechanic, as well as environmental destruction. Like, you can jump on some things, but you can use your physical attack to break a lot of furniture or boxes. Sometimes you will need to dive through an actual window, so you will need to use the dive mechanic because there's no other way through to the other side. And then a lot of times there's going to be either dialogue or cutscenes, and the consistency of this does vary. Sometimes it is like passive in the level, like just as you're walking around, like the guy's narrating to himself. And then a lot of times it is in between, like you're watching your character do something, like you're not controlling them and you're hearing either dialogue or most of the time it's monologue. And then that's going to be like the in between after you get back to the elevator and then go on to the next level out the elevator again. And let's talk pacing of the game. So I would say it's a pretty linear difficulty, especially when it comes to the encounters, which is the main thing that you're trying to progress through. There's not really like a drastic spike along the way. It just kind of slowly simmers and gets more difficult as you get introduced to more things. And so in the first few levels, you're going to have a lot of long hallways and a lot of space in the levels, so you can shoot your pistols at enemies that are far away. But then eventually you'll get in a lot of more of these close quarter encounters, as well as there's a lot of experimenting with verticality. Like some enemies can like teleport around and they'll be like up higher on a ledge and you have to see them before they shoot something down at you. So you have to manage like your level and up a bit, which can get a little complicated. And then as you get further in, there'll be spawning of enemies. So like you might go into a section and like a gate will lock behind you and enemies will spawn. Some of these scenarios will have multiple waves of enemies. And again, the trigger for these can vary. Saving a hostage can actually spawn enemies. Like there's a lot of different ways that things can get triggered. And let's talk about the enemies in a level. So there is some permanence through a level. So if you kill enemies, they don't like respawn after you go into another room or something like that. There's not a lot of variation in like the first third of the game, but by mid game, there is more variation. A lot of times you're just getting like these runners that are like holding themselves and they're just running at you. And then eventually you'll get these divers, which are like werewolves. So they move slower, but then if they're within a certain amount of feet of you, they will lunge at you. So you got to be ready for that. Eventually you'll have these flyers, like I said, these teleporters that'll be around shooting big projectiles, like they charge it up. So you want to kill them before they shoot it at you. I would say in general, It's not until about a third or halfway through the game that things actually really feel tough. I talked about there being a linear difficulty, but I didn't really mind or even notice any kind of major challenge until about halfway through the game. And a lot of it goes back to enemies and encounters and just what you're being exposed to. You're going to be in a lot of scenarios where you have to make different priority decisions. Like I said, if you've got a bunch of guys on the floor with you and like two shooters up top, you might need to prioritize the shooters depending on how far the other guys are, as well as like what weapon do you use in each of those scenarios. So like if you've got one of those teleporter guys up a little further away, you're not going to want to use the shotgun because it's not all going to hit them and it's going to take you a lot of shots. So, you know, you're switching between weapons to decide the effective range of whichever enemies you're trying to take care of first. And you're doing this all kind of in an instant. And then, of course, you have other options, like you can roll out of the way. You can use stakes. That can be really helpful for enemies that are just right in front of you. And don't forget, you have bullet time. I always forget this. It can really help you when there's a lot of enemies around you. You know, just kind of slow things down, switch to the weapon that you want to use, and then just pepper and really get enemies. There are some things you have to consider, though, with like your safety and your health. If your health gets low, like it takes time to do certain things, like to pop the pills. It takes a couple seconds to reload. Like I said, that takes a little bit and you might just want to switch weapons. Luckily, I feel like most encounters are actually pretty short-lived. So you can get away with like using all the clip in your machine gun and then moving over to the shotgun and then moving over to your pistols. And by then, assuming you have some relative accuracy, you should be out of the water and should be able to like reload all your weapons to get ready for the next place that you're going. But in the moment, it can be a little tense. And again, like I said, halfway through the game started to get pretty challenging and I died a few times. So let's talk about dying. It has to do with managing your health, of course. Your health is a red bar in the bottom left. Dying is not a big deal. There's a quick reload. It's very Hotline Miami in that way. And the checkpoints are really helpful because you're not starting at the beginning of the level every time you die. Most of the time, the checkpoints are like right before a major encounter. Navigating can be a little difficult, I feel. Like I said, you're doing each level that's like a loop. You're going out and then back to the elevator. You can get lost or not know where to go, and I did have a couple moments of that midway through the game at least. But all in all, I would say the levels are pretty small. I didn't get lost often. I think there are some good indicators like the heart color. Like when you pick up a heart, it's like, oh, okay, that's like the door that I need to find, and they glow pretty. But as you're exploring, you can pick up a lot of things. You're going to find a lot of ammo. Each weapon has its own ammo, and the box looks a certain shape and has a specific color. You're going to find a lot of pills that you can pick up. Stakes, which is really nice. All of these have limits, so each gun has a different ammo limit, but your pills and your stakes, you can only hold 5 at a time. The stakes are really good, though, because you can get them pretty much anywhere. You just have to break any kind of wooden furniture, which is like literally everywhere. So like dressers, side tables, any kind of table, any kind of chair, sometimes randomly just stacks of chairs. And if you hit them, you'll probably get a stake. And you can also explore around and find some of the secret audio like diaries. Some of them are radios. Some of them are like projectors, like film projectors, but you're really just getting the audio. I really like finding these because they give a lot of the story, especially with you and your relationship. And finally, in terms of accessibility, the difficulty in this game is superb because it is fully customizable, or you can just slide it and go to like hard or easy, but they're named differently. I was playing on a difficulty level called Intended, which is like, if you're someone who likes to play a game true to what the devs want, that's what you would go with. But you can switch those around. But if you go down on the menu, there are sliders for different things, like the damage output that you do, the damage that enemies give, or like your health or things like that. I didn't look at all of them, but there were a lot of options. So I really like that customization. Some people, you know, can play to their strengths or, you know, guard their weaknesses, however you want to play. I love that. And like I said, the game does autosave at checkpoints, which is really nice. I have never quit during a level, but I think like when I hit the go to main menu, it said like all progress since the last checkpoint. So I think that you can save mid-level, but I only quit between levels. And sometimes after a level, if there was a cutscene, you might have to rewatch the cutscene, but you can skip it. So accessibility, definitely a plus.
Anything they saw. Pounding in your head's a motherfucker looking for the brainless sucker dark thing hiding in the mirror. The rupture is demanding, gun flash commanding. Get on your knees and break. Gun in hand, kill the world. kill this room. Break shit. The call is from inside the house. Hunt the beast. Break shit. Sear the flesh. Burning walls. Burning eyes. Break shit. Claw the breach. Clear your brain. Love the leech. Break shit. Kill people. Break shit. Kill people. Break shit. Kill people. Break shit. Break shit. Kill people. Break shit. Kill people. Break shit. Kill people. Break shit.
All right, let's talk about the vibe of El Paso Elsewhere. Now, this is the aspect of the game that really has the legs. So let's start with themes and setting. I've said it 1,000 times already. This game is such an ode to Max Payne. It just emulates it. It really tries to capture that noir feeling. There's this constant narration of you, the character, and he is cynical, he's jaded and poetic at times. Just a matter-of-fact delivery. You know, a lot of gallows humor. I laughed quite a bit of times. It just reminded me so much of just a Remedy game, in fact. I mean, even like the way that Alan Wake narrates his own writing, matter-of-factly, like, oh, the boy was standing in the window, scarred. Silly things like that. And the subject matter and all that stuff with the characters, I definitely had some chuckle situations. You've got a love story. Again, very Max Payne, and you're getting a little bit of past and present. Like, the timeline is not clear. You're just kind of getting colored in here and there. The audio diaries, I feel like, really tell a lot about the interactions between you and the other person for you to piece together the timeline. What's good about the love story, or interesting, is that you're not together anymore. And surprise, it's the female Dracula. Her name is Dracula. I haven't found any, like, actual lore on this character outside of this, but super interesting. So with that in play, there's a lot of things that you might expect. There's vampires as enemies. We talked about werewolves. A lot of the settings, you're in like graveyards or things like that. Obviously, you're getting stakes to kill these enemies. Most of that type of stuff is just the visual stuff. Like, it doesn't get deeply religious or anything like that. But the logic of the lore, your character dating this vampire, is in the story, and it like slowly unfolds. And I really just like the way it does that. But then eventually starts to dig deeper, talks about demons and rituals and things like that. Eventually, you're going to get to the topic of the end of the world because of the situation that you're in, or at least what you're realizing. So let's just talk about you, your character, and where you are. This is kind of a journey of self-discovery. Obviously, you're discovering who this character is, but it's being narrated. And so where you are and what is going on is kind of being discovered by the character through like current observation and also like reflection on things that happen. So like, you're putting this together as the character's putting it together. I just like the way that narration unfolds everything. It's not trying to be too gimmicky, like every Final Fantasy, like the main character wakes up, oh, I have amnesia or anything like that. This character definitely knows what's going on in the general sense, but is trying to get his footing about like literally what is happening to him right now. And so that journey is pretty interesting to discover along the way. And some of it unfolds when he's talking about the void. So there's like a question of interdimensionality, and that really spills over to the visuals at some point. There's at least at first, a real lacking of logic for what you're seeing as you're going through the levels. And again, the narration kind of unfolds that for you. And then eventually we get into other entities, deals being made. It's very much like Constantine a little bit. Again, not as overtly religious, but a little bit of that like logic and lore of vampires and demons and stuff like that. And so I do want to comment just about the pacing of the story in general. I was not expecting it to get the way that it gets where I am, at least now in the game, but where it gets to like a third or halfway through the game, I was not expecting that after playing like the first, you know, hour or so. Again, this character self-discovery, this deep relationship, finding the extra stuff in the game didn't necessarily telegraph that right away. It took a little time to get to that where I was like, oh, there is something interesting here. Maybe that's a positive. I don't know, but there is something pretty deep at a certain point. And let's talk about the visuals. This is not the game's strong suit, but I think it's kind of intentional. So it's super basic. This could be a PlayStation 2 game, in all honesty. The enemies and the environments, kind of goofy looking. It's very Dreadnautical, like I said, like these kind of goofy characters or whatever. I'm not sure if it's trying to be comical or just minimalistic, but the vampires are just like these pale, bloody things that are running at you. Almost looks like an oversized fetus or something. The werewolves are kind of dark, but the gist kind of comes across. In the beginning, you're going through these simple hallways, almost like you're in a motel, and then you're going into the different rooms. Walls are just a solid color, doors are doors, you know, brown furniture for you to break for steaks. Most things are made of wood. It's not like you see the wood grain, but it's just like a dark brown. And then other times you're in other environments like the graveyards, candlelit on graves and stuff like that. You can go into some of the tombs just to get ammo or stuff. Enemies can sometimes hide in there. And then these, you know, large cast iron fences or gates, the spikes that come up. Overall, the game is very dark and in shadow, especially when you're in like the graveyards, but even when you're in like the motel, like it's very dimly lit. And so that can make like spotting the werewolves kind of tough, especially in the graveyards. They are basically black colored, but you see the yellow eyes. Indication is nice because the ammo that you'll find or the pills, they kind of glow in the dark like an orange, and the specific shapes will stand out. Like I said, the different ammo boxes for different guns. What's also nice is when you are trying to aim with that dot, if you hit an enemy that's far away, like the dot will get like surrounded by like a pink or something trying to communicate that you hit them. And pretty early on, you'll notice there's no ceiling, especially when you're in the motel. And this is an interesting choice. It definitely ties into the lore and what's going on, but it has other benefits. Like for gameplay, you can see far away, so this can help you like to find a hostage because there's like a pillar of light that shoots up from them. Or sometimes enemies kind of fly very high, so you can actually shoot enemies very far away, like before you get there. So that can help you with future encounters. I think this kind of ties to the theme of interdimensionality. It also does speak to like this random assortment of rooms that you come across. Like in some levels, you'll be in like a motel and then you'll go off into a graveyard. So it's really kind of kooky. But visually, when you look up at the ceiling, or if you're like even on the edge of quote unquote the room and there's nothing beyond it, you'll see like this pink or purple abyss. So those visuals really do come across. And then you visually, I mean, you just look like a giant sack puppet that's a character. Again, it looks like DK mode for GoldenEye 64. Like your head is just like this sack, and there's kind of like vague crayon drawn on it for your features. It's interesting and almost comical because your character comes across as like visually stoic and expressionless, yet the camera angle in different cutscenes or your head, you know, moves or goes down, and it really comes across as like this is the character. But the voice really fills in a lot. Again, very Max Payne. I feel like, you know, Max Payne on Xbox or whatever, 1 and 2, you know, the graphics were terrible. The mouth of the character wasn't moving, and he had the same, you know, dumb Sam Lake face the whole time. So it really kind of captures that. But the body language of these cutscenes of your character really also does translate. And then finally, in terms of audio, the music in this game is interesting, and it does vary. Like if you're in an enemy encounter, it'll be like heavy run and gun, like Hotline Miami. It might be like synth, but then other times it'll be like satanic metal. And then in between, or when there's no enemies around, like they'll be somber, slow during these like realizations, like really meaningful notes and whatnot. And then depending on what's going on in the story, there's a little bit of like fourth wall breakage, because like it sounds like your voice actor is like yelling or rapping to a fast beat and is sounding super angsty. Again, this is very Remedy. The character just like kind of breaking through and like screaming about what's going on in his head in the music soundtrack. All things I love. So for that to come through here, it's really interesting and enjoyable. And then sound effects will kind of be a thing. Again, kind of breaking the fourth wall. There'll be like random mouth sounds of your character almost happening behind you, like smacking of lips or whatever, like in quick succession, like really kind of freaked me out a bunch of times. And enemies sort of growling, you know, knowing that they're nearby. That can also be a good audio cue that something is about to happen. All right, let's wrap up the conversation about El Paso elsewhere. So just like I said on the last episode, I came for the fast-paced third-person shooting, but I stayed for this noir story and as it unfolded with this vampire apocalypse love thing going on, it just kind of kept me going. Again, that Remedy feel. I can't make enough comparisons to Max Payne. It is one-to-one in so many ways. I see it more as an ode, but just Remedy in general, yet a unique take, you know, the vampire angle. Having that love story, keeping it noir and grounded, it's not going to turn into something like Twilight or True Blood. It really does still maintain that noir, like cynical, without getting too fantastical. Visuals, obviously rough, but charming if you can let it go or if it's nostalgic for you. And I think if people loved Crow Country, you'll have a similar feel here. But super reduced overall and simple. And I feel like it seems intentional. It's trying to bring back a little of that appreciation of Max Payne or even games like Uncharted, where it's just like, you know, the story is what drives this. And then you have these combat encounters where like the combat is pretty good, but the characters and the story and what's going on is really what's driving you. In terms of value, I think 20 for an MSRP may actually be a little high. I'd prefer it to be at 15 and then grab it on sale at 10. I got it for 14. That was okay. I really feel like the problem with this game is the best parts don't come until like 3 hours in. I found that the first 10 chapters and whatnot, I'm getting little tidbits of the story and it seems a bit repetitive, but both the gameplay challenge with different encounters, different guns, and the story discovery, like when it starts to hit, I just feel like it maybe takes too long to see the meat of this and to really experience it. I do think the game is special under the hood. Again, if you're a Remedy lover, you will really get into this game. The quick third-person shooting could hook people, and it is a game that I feel like could also be very jump in, jump out. So even if you're not getting quite enough from the story or it's not pulling you yet, I do feel like this is a game that you could play a couple levels or a couple chapters at night. I did enjoy my time with the game, but consider my thoughts here and the reasoning for such, and whatever side of it you fall on, so be it. But I do recommend the game. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.